the foundation of it is freedom, individual freedom, to control your own money, your own net worth, and to interact with who you want. That are buying at those amounts, they understand Bitcoin, they understand it's going to go back up, and they buy the dip just as hard as a pleb putting in 50 euro or $50 when it dips.
There's just going to be a lag, and I think it's going to happen the same way Bitcoin has, where you kind of, new people trickle in each cycle. Eventually you reach some critical mass where it's like, you know, enough people are here that it gets interesting and people are jumping on board. Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Bitcoin Way podcast. I'm your host, Michael Jordan. Today we have as our guest Michael Rorada, who is the head of marketing for BTC Prague. He has worked in Bitcoin for a number of years, including at an OTC brokerage. What a fantastic guy. Great conversation. Really enjoyed talking with him. We discuss his previous experience in marketing and working on the OTC brokerage side of things, his transition more recently to working in marketing at BTC Prague. And we talk about his personal Bitcoin journey. And then at the end, gets a little spicy with his hot take and unpopular opinion that he shares. And we went back and forth on that a little bit, but truly fantastic guy. Great conversation. I think you'll enjoy it. Alrighty, everyone. Like I said in the intro, I've got Michael here with me. Michael, welcome to the Bitcoin Way podcast.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this conversation. You come highly recommended from a member of our team, and probably a lot of topics we can cover here. I want to start, though. You work on BTC Prague, and would love to know if you could just start by telling people who you are, a bit about your professional background, and what led you to begin working on BTC Prague.
Yeah, sure. I joined BTC Prague earlier this year, about 4 months before the event took place in June. So that was around end of February, beginning of March. So that is kind of pretty recent. Before that, I worked at a small OTC brokerage, a Bitcoin brokerage in the Bitcoin space, which was kind of my first job in the Bitcoin space. That sort of went belly up, and I was looking for a job for a few months, and then February of this year joined BTC Prague. Before I started working in Bitcoin, I worked in marketing communications and events organization in the marine and offshore industry, so something completely different. I was hoping trying to find a job in Bitcoin for a long time. And to be honest, I wouldn't want to go back to a fiat job anymore.
I know once you taste a Bitcoin job, it's hard to head back to the fiat mine. So I can't blame you. So I'm going to steer this conversation a different direction for a couple minutes. I'm curious. So the OTC trading business is not one that I know a lot about, understand well. Could you explain for my own personal benefit and for listeners who are maybe newer to understanding the inner workings of how Bitcoin is passed around institutionally on exchanges and all of that, what exactly is an OTC trading desk? What do you do? How does that sort of fuel the the Bitcoin marketplace?
Yeah, I was CMO, I was chief marketing officer, so I wasn't really involved in the day-to-day nitty-gritty of operations. But what I can say is that OTC stands for over the counter. So that's usually venues where people that have a lot more to spend buy and sell Bitcoin. And reasons for them to use that instead of an exchange can be because, okay, if you place an order on an exchange to buy $1 million worth of Bitcoin, you are somehow going to influence the order book there, besides the whole KYC aspect. So obviously, there is a difference. KYC is not just binary 0 or 1. When you use the big famous exchanges, then your KYC data is there. You're not sure how safely it is guarded. And with an OTC brokerages that have on and off ramps to the fiat system, to banking rails, they obviously also need to do KYC, but it can be a bit more minimal. And the place where I worked, it basically meant that only in the case of some kind of criminal investigation in the country where that company was registered, would they divulge that information. And the other thing is what I mentioned is slippage. So if you want to place big orders, then you're going to create slippage on the exchange that you're using. meaning you push the price up or down. And that obviously gets evened out by arbitrage bots. But still, it means you're not going to get the entire amount of Bitcoin for the price you were hoping for. And when people like that go, high net worth individuals go through an OTC brokerage, then that OTC brokerage can use 5 or 10 different liquidity providers. That could be miners, could be those big exchanges themselves. Could be different sources. And they basically consolidate different chunks from all those liquidity providers into one offer at a fixed price. It's a way to get a better price and to safeguard more privacy in general.
Okay, interesting. So I'm curious then, from like a marketing perspective, I assume though that you all would have provided like liquidity to exchanges as well as direct dealings with high net worth individuals or institutions. Is that correct?
It would mainly be serving high net worth individuals that were just in a Signal chat or a Telegram chat, placing orders or asking for quotes. Then the operation side would take care of the liquidity provision, getting that, sourcing that from different sides.
Okay. And so your marketing efforts then were specifically geared, it was really a B2C, straight to consumer sell to the
Yeah. So the marketing side was obviously the difficulty in that thing is that if you have like this small operation that is trying to build up personal relationships with these high net worth individuals, then the business development manager could be talking with someone in a private chat for a year, teaching them how to do self-custody, kind of the stuff that the Bitcoin way is also helping people do, like half orange pilling them or finishing the orange pilling process, teaching them how to do self-custody. And then after maybe a year or 1.5 years, they are ready to place an order. So from a marketing perspective, the long curve, was pretty difficult. So we put out content. We had our own podcast. I mean, Andy and Tony were also on that podcast. The difficulty is that, okay, you're putting information out there that helps orange pill people basically. But then the real conversion might happen a lot later. And there's also no guarantee that they will actually place that order with you. They might go to Coinbase in the end anyway. So that's kind of the difficulty with marketing in that field. And so it depends a lot on personal recommendations, personal networking, word of mouth, things like that.
It sounds like a long sales cycle you have to deal with. So then I guess my last question on that is just did what you witnessed make you bullish? Like, were you seeing more and more of these high net worth individuals coming in? Because I think it seems to me like a lot of this stuff happens under the radar for your everyday Bitcoin pleb. And I imagine you got sort of a front row seat to who are some of these people that are buying larger amounts of Bitcoin. You're not seeing slippage. They're not, affecting the price of Bitcoin in a material way. And so it all happens behind the scenes, really. Is it something that for you, you realize, wow, more and more of these people are coming in? Or is it kind of a slower grind than that?
Like we discussed, the cycle, the sales cycle itself was pretty difficult from a marketing perspective to really determine, okay, is what we are doing bringing in conversions? Because even the people that are coming in, they reach out and you're not sure because it's all personal context. It's difficult to attribute that to some kind of marketing effort. But at the same time, like you said, especially when you have periods like today, yesterday, you see the price dip, then in many cases, the requests would increase. So the people that are buying at those amounts, they understand Bitcoin, they understand it's going to go back up, and they buy the dip just as hard as a pleb putting in 50 euro or $50 when it dips.
That's awesome. All right, back to BTC Prague. So you told me you've been twice. I think you said you've worked on Bitcoin Prague, BTC Prague one time this past year.
Yeah.
So first of all, that's not a whole lot of time to like identify an evolution of, what's changed. But I'm curious, from last year to this year, I think like if you look at like the Bitcoin conference here in the United States, like this year, I wasn't at the last one. This was actually my first this year. We had a ton of politicians there as an example, right? Like, you know, Donald Trump was a keynote speaker, mm-hmm. RFK Jr., a lot of state senators and people. Was there anything like materially different in your eyes from last year to this year that you noticed?
You mean between the two BTC Prague editions?
Yeah.
In general, not obviously kind of the beginnings of the bull market have kicked off since the beginning of this year with the ETF approvals and BTC basically coming back to the all-time high. So in terms of sentiment, yeah, something has changed. We also, sorry, we also had a bit larger attendance than the year before. But at the same time, our policy is kind of different. We don't really have high profile politicians on stage at BTC Prague. It's more about the people building stuff, the real anarchist freedom movement that is very present in Prague itself. And at the same time, more people also from the corporate world, the legacy finance, telecommunications, energy world. So it's more diverse, and also some activists, but there isn't a big political focus.
Is there anything that you noticed this year that, and obviously I know market sentiment has a lot to do with attendance and just the vibe that you get at an event like that, but was there anything in particular that stood out that people were talking about that made you particularly excited? New developments, anything?
It's just the whole vibe. I mean, I must admit the first edition, I was there still working for my previous employer. I was there just for networking, hanging out, and it was a lot more relaxed. This year, as I mentioned, I was responsible for marketing for the whole event. And during the event, that meant mainly managing a team of about between 10 and 15 photographers, videographers with a huge schedule of different kinds of footage and photography that had to be brought in. And at the same time, having two video editors sitting there live editing shorts from talks on stage. So I spent a lot of time in that room where everyone's coming back with their SD cards and everything. But obviously, I also spoke with people, walked around the expo, hung out with people. And I mean, it's difficult to say, not so much in sentiment, even in 23, when we were still more or less in a bear market. The vibe was very good and I loved it. It was back then that was my third Bitcoin conference that I attended after Riga and Amsterdam. And it was also the biggest because it's the biggest in Europe. But what amazed me back in 23, and that was kind of the same in this year's event, is that it has huge size. So you're talking about 6,000-7,000 people. It has the high quality, very slick production quality of any other huge event or festival or pop concert, whatever you mentioned. Just very impressive in terms of stage, lighting, AV and everything. But at the same time, it somehow retained, and that was the case in 23 before I started working with them. So that was my opinion then, and I only saw that confirmed this year again, that it retained the vibe of a smaller meetup. Of the nice atmosphere of hanging out with like-minded Bitcoiners, and then next to that you have like all the side events, you have the big expo, you have the after parties and things like that. But like I said, it's a huge event that somehow, I think that's mainly because of the focus on keeping the high signal and cut out the noise that you sometimes get in the Bitcoin ecosystem. Just focusing on use cases, on solutions. What is Bitcoin solving for us? How does it help promote more individual freedom? And just staying very close to that general, hardcore Bitcoin ethos that just translates into everything you do as a team to organize the event. And in the end, translates into the atmosphere that is there.
Does the team find itself having to like weed out potential sponsors or vendors that would attend the event because you just say too much noise, not enough signal?
Yeah, I mean, there is obviously especially when you move towards a bull market, then there are a lot of platforms, potential sponsors and partners that want to be part of it that have a different focus. So there are some companies, for example, that are partners that are on the expo that sell more than just Bitcoin, so to speak. But according to our conditions, they cannot actively promote it during BTC Prague. So the focus has to be on Bitcoin. And I mean, we have around 80 companies there. And I mean, that's just a gut feeling, but I think 90% are really real 100% Bitcoin companies. And then you have a few that have a broader palette of products and services. But like I said, during the event, they only focus on Bitcoin related products and services. So yeah, that's kind of but that also means that, yeah, in the run up to the event, we obviously get approached by a lot of parties that are different in that sense and that we have to refuse.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, that would be my one complaint about the Bitcoin conference is it's a great event. They do a good job pulling it together. I think, you know, admittedly they go for a different, sort of atmosphere than you do. Yours sounds much more up my alley. It's just very busy. It's like a 20,000 person event, and you walk around and, like, you know, there are people making announcements about staking your Bitcoin to earn other cryptocurrencies, and it's just like you're just like rolling your eyes. You know, it's yeah. Some of the nonsense. Like we haven't learned, you know, from all the mistakes of the last decade. So yeah,
that's kind of what I meant. In that's kind of the noise we want to keep out, and we want to stick to the Bitcoin only signal. I mean, admittedly, I've not been to those events or in Miami or Nashville. And I mean, what you tell me is kind of what I saw on social media during the event. And like I said, I think there's also a cultural difference just between the United States and Europe. And I think that would even translate to another event that you go to in Europe compared to events in the US. I mean, I've been in events organization myself for many years in the marine and offshore industry, and just like industry trade shows in the US are different than in Europe. So the same goes for Bitcoin conferences, I think. But then on top of that, there is, of course, the individual choices and focus that are chosen by the management.
How would you sort of describe that cultural difference in your mind? And I won't take any personal offense. I'll probably agree with you, but I'm just curious.
It's even, I mean, I think in general, in business, in marketing, there is just a different culture, probably more in your face, more aggressive marketing in the US and a bit more low key in Europe, just as a very, very general platitude, so to speak. But I think that even translates and is noticeable. And then just the cultural aspect, specifically related to Prague, and you have the former Soviet or Eastern Bloc history there with people living in, under totalitarian rule, basically trying to carve out a life for themselves. And that has really created a culture of if you cannot find it in the shop, make it yourself or find someone who can make it for you. And that goes from furniture all the way to hardware wallets, because basically the people that there are so many innovations coming from Prague, be it the BIP39 seed phrases, the first hardware wallet, the first company selling Bitcoin ATMs all over the world, that all comes from Prague. But that also comes from just individual people, hackers and freedom fighters, building the stuff that they were lacking for their own lives, the inconvenience that they were experiencing, and solving that for themselves, and then understanding that there is a potential to turn that into a business. And that is kind of the pedigree that you have there for decades. And although the BTC related market in the US is big, with a lot of big names and big companies, and yeah, I don't know. There is just a cultural difference there. I mean, I won't say that there aren't freedom fighters in the U.S. and you have. There is also a lot of pedigree there in terms of the constitution, and the rights that people should have based on that constitution. But it's difficult to compare because it's a completely different history, and that translates into the culture and of the events that you organize there as well.
Yeah. I'm broad brushing this up a bit, but it seems to me like the further east you get in Europe, the lower the tolerance for nonsense and noise and distraction. There seems to be like a culture of like, maybe this is the wrong word, but purity. Like, what's the thing that's going to materially improve my life? Less gimmicks, you know, less impulse purchasing, and I don't know, just noise, I guess, is at least from my perspective, looking at, you know, footage from Prague and talking to the team who was able to be there. That's kind of my general takeaway. Is that, would you say that maybe is?
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, I'm from the Netherlands myself, so that is like considered northwestern Europe. And even if you just look at the aspect, okay, when did this population last deal with totalitarian rule? Then for Western Europe and the Netherlands, that is the Second World War. So that's the stories that I remember from my grandfather. When you look at Central and Eastern Europe, that's only a few decades ago, before the Berlin Wall came down, until then, people were still living under some more serious totalitarianism. I think that memory is still a lot more vivid, and I think that to a large extent determines how based low tolerance towards nonsense people have. So I can only agree with that, and probably the Western European or what is usually called the developed world countries are also under a lot of more influence from the WEF and structures like that that are trying to push through some kind of agenda that just hits more of a brick wall in these Eastern and Central European countries in the way I see it.
Oh yeah, I can imagine. I think unfortunately it's like one of those things. I think pain is such an important teacher. And for so long, you know, Western Europe, the United States, we've had it good. It's very easy to for the average person to sort of concede to the authority of you know, the World Economic Forum or, you know, their government, you know, in any capacity. I feel like once you've you're not too far removed from the pain of that was experienced in Eastern Europe and probably just a whole different perspective that many people have. So I'm curious, I'm wondering if maybe you could just sort of like pull back the curtains for us. So BTC Prague is, it's not like it's the largest conference in terms of attendance, but this is a massive event. There are a lot of logistical hurdles you've got to jump over, moving pieces. Could you kind of talk about what goes on behind the scenes? Like when do you start planning? What are some of the challenges, the obstacles you know you're going to hit every year? What effort goes into this sort of thing?
Yeah, obviously it's a lot of effort with a pretty small team. And I must admit, like I said, I joined BTC Prague 4 months before the event, had to hit the ground running. The train was already rolling and just basically continue and improve the processes that were going on there in terms of marketing. Now that we have almost a year before the next event, we're doing a lot more planning in terms of creating a strategic marketing communication plan. But planning right now is mainly focused on the concept, on the positioning, what kind of direction do you want to take the event in, instead of just copy-pasting last year and the year before. Try to innovate in which kind of crowd you want to attract, potentially new audiences. So that's kind of like an internal process right now, analyzing, brainstorming, coming up with that. And in a few months, that will translate into new content, new campaigns. And then that is when kind of the marketing will kick off. So it's almost a full year of planning and working on that. The history of the event itself is, like I said, 23 was the first event. But the founders, two brothers, Martin and Matthias, They organized a local conference in the Czech Republic for a few years before that. So they started in 2021, which is still during COVID. And luckily there was like a 2 or 3 week relief in all the COVID measures and the event could take place. I think they attracted 500 people for the first event. Then the next year they did 1,000. The year after that they did 2,000. So they doubled every year. And then basically they understood the potential in Europe, and especially with this whole Bitcoin ecosystem that is present in the Czech Republic. And they decided to create BTC Prague, kind of like the international version, which from the get-go was very successful, with the first event really established reputation as, the way I like to say it, the biggest in Europe and the best in the world. From there it's kind of continuing on that foundation, building on that foundation. And like you said, what goes into it, when I was walking around at the event this year myself, having been there the first year, then working on with the team for this year's event, and just seeing it all come together, I mean, literally the day before, when you walk into the expo and the main stage hall, it was mostly empty, and just in one night everything gets built and it looks awesome. And then you come the next morning and everything is ready to roll. And it's pretty insane how much preparation goes into that. And also we have a lot of respect for Martin and Matthias, because like I said, it's a pretty small team. There are some subcontractors that joined just a few months before, when the workload increases. But still, it's like less than 10 people, basically. It's pretty wild. And the rough division here is that Matthias is the program director, mostly doing everything related to speakers and the programming. And Martin does everything that is related to the expo, where you have the booths of the exhibiting companies, and also, kind of marketing until I joined.
So yeah.
It's two guys with a bunch of subcontractors running it, basically.
That is crazy.
Yeah, and then just seeing that level of quality, that level of how good it looks, also the feedback you get from speakers, from partners, just the preparation notes they get, they know exactly where they need to be, when, at which moment, the quality of the VIP area, the VIP food. I mean, I went through the post-show customer survey or attendee survey that we send out after the event, just to categorize and order all the data, and the feedback is just like very positive. There's always room for improvement, but on the whole, everyone is very positive about it. So, and then just realizing how that was achieved with such a small team, it's kind of amazing.
Hey there, just a quick break and we'll be right back to the show. I wanted to spend a minute sharing with you how the Bitcoin Way helps individuals achieve self-custody and self-sovereignty over their money, their online life, and having a plan B as an individual. The Bitcoin Way can help you properly custody your Bitcoin using only air-gapped, open-source, Bitcoin-only hardware wallets. We help you set up and run your node. It doesn't matter if you're brand new to Bitcoin, if you've been in Bitcoin 10 years, there's a good chance that there's a gap in your self-custody setup, and we can help resolve that and give you confidence and peace of mind. When it comes to your online life, you are being tracked and watched and spied on by governments, by corporate interests all over the place. We can give you confidence that even logging onto Wi-Fi at your airport or at your local coffee shop, you are protecting yourself and remaining self-sovereign and private. Finally, if you want help adding to your passport repertoire, we've got a citizenship program whereby we establish temporary residency and walk you through the entire process, white glove service, boots on the ground through citizenship. It is important in a time of crazy economic and political upheaval that you have optionality when it comes to where you're going to live, reside, and spend your life. Check out thebitcoinway.com/podcast. You can schedule a free consult with the team to learn more about our services and understand how we can help you achieve full self-sovereignty. Yeah, good for you guys.
And it's really exciting to be working on that. Just having kind of the same ideological focus, and then on top of that, the professional cooperation. Yeah, it's a really cool job.
There, There are all sorts of events, you know, taking place around the world. BTC Prague is the one where I've never heard anyone sort of critique in any harsh manner. I think it's a testament to the standards that you set for yourselves. So kudos to you. I think it's the whole event planning. It's such a thankless job. And, you know, I think about like my wife and I finished building a house last year that we live in now. And you don't realize when you're going through a process like that, how many tiny decisions you have to make, but they have to be made. Like what color, toilet paper holder are you going to have, sorts of just like crazy things. I can only imagine sort of you scale that to an event where you've got thousands of people showing up, what that looks like. Hats off to you. And next year, I'm very, very hopeful that I'll have the opportunity to be there. My team knows this, but I was taking my whole family. We were about to get on the plane 45 minutes before takeoff. My 3-year-old boy started vomiting a few more times right up to it. And we said, I don't want to get on a 7-hour flight through Paris to, with a sick kid. And so he ended up having strep throat. And so we ended up just calling it. But I need to double check my calendar for next year and make sure I'm good to go. Cause I would love to be there.
Yeah. 18th till 21st of June next year.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I imagine that's a beautiful time to be in Prague. Could you maybe talk a little bit about what about Prague makes it such a good city for this sort of event?
Yeah, I mean, in 23, when I went to BTC Prague the first time, was also the first time I visited Prague, the city, myself. So it's just a beautiful city, with medieval streets and architecture. It's really awesome city. Just to drink a beer, to have dinner, to hang out with people, and it's kind of also very visible. What was built, I mean, you have many cities where you can still see that what was the kind of architecture and the projects that society took on a gold standard compared to the concrete blocks and nonsense that were strewn among it after 71, so to speak. I mean, even one or two of the speakers used that as an example in their talk about that very subject. And then the other aspect, what I was really surprised about, I mean, I heard about it, but what I was really surprised about, what I mentioned already, this pedigree of decades and decades of hacker culture, freedom culture, basically people fighting for their individual freedoms, that actually goes back 600 years to the defenestrations. I don't know if you've heard about that, but that is basically a term referring to a few events during the history of Prague, when they literally threw totalitarian rulers, the ones that were trying to take people's freedoms, they literally threw them out of a window of a castle in Prague as an act of revolt, and that kind of permeates into today's culture. The way I see it, the Bitcoin ecosystem that you have in Prague is kind of like the contemporary continuation of that. Obviously, between that you have the whole period of the Eastern Bloc, of the communist regime there, and people basically regaining their freedom from that. There's also a lot of things I don't even know that I need to read more about around that history. But it's basically a 600-year fight for individual freedoms, of which the last one or two decades kind of coincide with the appearance of Bitcoin and a lot of these local hackers and freedom fighters using that as a tool for individual freedom and building products and services that make that that UX better, so to speak. I was like conceptually aware of that, but when I went there and you talk to people at meetups, you have a cypherpunk meetup there, which is loaded with a lot of people. And you just feel that freedom fighter vibe. I was really amazed by that whole subculture that is present there. And I mean, I don't live in the Netherlands myself anymore, basically for some of the reasons that we already went into, what is happening in Western Europe. And but if I had to go back to the European Union, I'd probably prefer Prague over Rotterdam. So that probably says something.
That's amazing. So let's set the conference aside for just a couple of minutes. I want to just hear a little bit about you, your thoughts on Bitcoin. Let's just start with the obvious origin story. What led you into Bitcoin?
Yeah, that's a story in itself. It's a class of 2017, so the bull market that was happening then, and just everybody at work talking about Bitcoin, didn't know anything about it. And I even borrowed money, aped into Bitcoin, and then very quickly into all kinds of shit coins, and lost a lot of it. But I was triggered enough through the 2018-2019 bear market to start listening to podcasts, listening to audiobooks, and throughout that whole bear market, basically educated myself into becoming a Bitcoin maximalist. And understanding, okay, this is the tool that is going to, give us some leverage or some kind of asymmetric advantage over the forces that try to increase their control over the population. So that's kind of in a nutshell the story.
So was there a specific attribute of Bitcoin that you latched to that you said, okay, like this is why this is powerful and why this is, has really long-term potential?
Just probably the game theory behind the protocol, that even long-term, the way I see it, even its biggest detractors will be forced to do something with Bitcoin, to adopt it, to buy it or use it, because they can't help themselves, basically, because the game theory behind Bitcoin's protocol basically weaponizes human action against people themselves, regardless of whether they like Bitcoin or not. Because human action, if you look at it from a perspective of praxeology, is human beings doing something and engaging in some kind of activity to reduce uneasiness for themselves. And if you understand that everything else is going to go to zero compared to Bitcoin, and it's basically the only... the most pristine monetary asset that you can imagine, that then even the biggest detractors that might be talking about it on TV right now, there will come a time in the near future or in the midterm that they will be forced to buy if they're not buying secretly right now. So that is kind of and then that, combining that with understanding when you read the Bitcoin standard, the influence of time preference. So the whole influence of fiat money on the way people deal with these challenges and the way they deal with money, with making money, spending money, saving money, how that influences the quality of businesses, of architecture and anything, basically all human endeavor. And then understanding, okay, if we transition back to a sound money standard based on Bitcoin, then in the mid/long term, that is also going to influence people's time preference. And I'm really convinced that when that happens, it's not really an if, but when that happens, it will inevitably also mean kind of a Renaissance 2.0, when people are able again to plan for the long term, and once they or their family, their lineage reaches a certain point of wealth that they can preserve for the long term, they can just focus on other endeavors than just making ends meet and making enough money to pay the rent and pay the supermarket. So like I said, I think that will really bring back kind of a Renaissance 2.0, when there's going to be a lot more greatness than the consumerism nonsense that we see nowadays.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I'm curious. So I'll speak for myself briefly. The way I look at my evolution in Bitcoin is like my values, my personal values haven't really changed immensely since finding Bitcoin. I think for some people, they feel like they had very backwards, values and principles. I didn't feel that way. My opinions about the way things should work and what's optimal have changed immensely. And I'm curious, what your experience has been, like on a personal way, when you started learning about Bitcoin, what for you has changed? What's kind of remained the same? And sort of philosophically, where do you stand today?
Yeah, that's kind of has been a pretty deep rabbit hole for me personally. Not everyone knows that. Okay, I've told it to some people, but the first basically 40 years of my life, I was a Jehovah's Witness. So I grew up in a Jehovah's Witness family. My mother was born into this. My grandfather was literally, like I said about these stories about the war, my grandfather was literally in imprisoned in Nazi Germany for being what was called a Bible student back then, but kind of the earlier name of that religion. And that upbringing has given me a lot of, good things in terms of personal principles and morale and things like that. But at the same time, I now understand that it's basically a cult and uses the same mechanisms of using fear, implicit and explicit fear, to control people that you see under totalitarian political systems as well. And at a certain point, I just couldn't deal with that anymore. I just snapped out of it and left that religion. But that also meant that over time, I reset my entire life. I got divorced. New job, new house, everything. And that kind of coincided with what I earlier described, 2017, 18, 19, the bear market where I was educating myself about Bitcoin. So becoming like really free, putting my personal freedom and happiness at the first place instead of what others are, want you to do or others are expecting of you. That kind of coincided with discovering Bitcoin and becoming a Bitcoiner. I think those are kind of two separate processes that still reinforced each other. And then after becoming a Bitcoiner, I became also interested more in libertarian philosophy, reading Murray Rothbard and Hans Hermann Hoppe and Mises and things like that. So through Bitcoin, I think that happens a lot, that people through Bitcoin also become a libertarian. That desire for personal and individual freedom goes back to my past, living in basically in a totalitarian cult and snapping out of that. Just having that general appreciation for the value of individual freedom goes back to that, but it then also translates into what I value see in Bitcoin, and that then further translates into totalitarian philosophical views that I now hold.
So I can obviously understand why the faith in which you were brought up would impact sort of this process. I'm curious if living in Western Europe, though, where there's, at least from my perspective, it tends to be a more socialist sort of organization of society. Like for me personally, like in the United States, I don't live in like some far left leaning city or something where like not a lot of communists around me. Right. So for me to make the leap from the values I was raised with into Bitcoin, it was a paradigm shift, but I didn't feel like I had to depart from these values that were sort of, passed down to me. And so I felt to some degree like I kind of had it easy. I had to be curious. I had to be open-minded, but it wasn't such a hard thing for me to wrap my head around. For you, in light of your faith, the faith in which you were raised and where you're from, was this like, were you like going to bed at night struggling through this? You know, like was this like sort of like spiritual warfare going on in your mind or something?
Definitely. But that was probably more on a personal and emotional level than on a philosophical / political level. Because the one thing that in this regard that you should know about Jehovah's Witnesses is that they are kind of like politically neutral. They say, okay, we have chosen Jesus Christ and God as our king, as our leader, so we don't involve ourselves with earthly politics, so to speak. So I was never engaged politically, either left wing or right wing or anything in between. The way it's seen in that religion as part of Satan's world, part of the devil's world, and the entire system of commerce, politics, and the likes, being under the control of the evil one, so to speak. So when I left that religion, I mean, in that religion, you're also encouraged to always put everything that is related to that religion in the first place, career, family, entertainment, leisure always comes second. And that also means that if you have some problems or struggle with some issues with financially or whatever, the first thing is always pray to God and he will show the way out. And when I left that religion, I very deeply felt that, okay, I'm on my own now, because whether I was really 100% on board with it or not, it was the first 40 years of my life that was the modus operandi, basically. That was, okay, you have a problem, you pray, and you try to keep focusing on those religious activities and hope that that God will provide for everything else. So when I left that, I very clearly felt like, okay, I'm on my own again, so... or not again, but I'm on my own. I need to make sure that I can provide for myself, that I can safeguard my own wealth, happiness, and freedom. So even before becoming really interested in Bitcoin, I became interested in geopolitics, not just from the mainstream media, but just subscribing to a lot of independent research journalists, geopolitical analysts, and trying to figure out, okay, what is going on behind the scenes, behind the veil that never gets lifted on mainstream media, to understand what is happening in the world, just for my own sake, just to protect myself, to have enough understanding to be able to at least not predict, but understand the probabilities of what is going to happen geopolitically in the world. And I mean, that's also the reason why I'm not in the EU, living in the EU anymore right now. And kind of Bitcoin was added to that. So in that process of becoming interested in all kinds of things like that, history, geopolitics, just from a selfish perspective, okay, because I need to take care of myself now, Bitcoin was basically added to that. That's kind of the process I went through.
Fascinating. I could not have anticipated this story for our podcast, but I'm so glad we got to talk about it. So one other, I'm going to shift topics one more time for you. I noticed on your Twitter feed, your X feed, you referenced Noster a lot, and I'm curious if you could maybe talk a bit about how pivotal you anticipate some of these decentralized social and messaging apps and protocols, more importantly, becoming. What makes you excited about them and eager to share them?
Yeah, I mean, I must admit, 2 weeks ago I was in Riga at the Baltic Honey Badger conference, which was there's a really strong thunderstorm right now, so I hope I keep electricity.
No, you're good.
Okay. So I was at Baltic Honey Badger in Riga 2 weeks ago. That was preceded by 2 days of Nostriga, which was kind of the conference that Jack Dorsey sponsors and promotes. So I think it took place in Costa Rica and in Tokyo before. And a few weeks ago that was taken to Riga. So we had a two-day conference program, just everything around Noster and this decentralized protocol that, I mean, many people that are superficially aware of it, I think it's kind of like a Twitter clone, and that's the biggest use case right now if you look at the apps that people are mainly using. But I think it really has the potential, and really became more convinced of that in those 2 days, just listening to talks, talking to people, that it has the potential to basically replace what we call the internet right now, which has turned into, which was had kind of the same principles when it started out of being just very free, open, and decentralized. Turned into this captured thing with all the big tech companies controlling everything. And I have the feeling that the Noster protocol has the potential to redo that or get a second shot at building a really decentralized internet. So just the kind of social/messaging apps, I think, are just the first wave, but there are also the first beginnings of commerce apps, kind of a decentralized Uber, a decentralized Craigslist, whatever you can think of, without the intermediaries, because it natively supports lightning transactions. So you can pay anyone selling you something or anyone creating content that you appreciate. You can pay them directly through those apps, through those platforms. And Yeah, until a few weeks ago when I was at that event, for me it was like, okay, I have an account, I use it sometimes, but it's kind of like a backup when the proverbial substance hits the fan at some point, and they really clamp down on X and all the other platforms, and we really need it. But yeah, I noticed since I was at that event, I tend to spend a bit more time on Noster right now than on X. So I think it really holds a lot of potential, and it really felt like being in a room with a few hundred people building the new internet, basically. And I'm not a technical guy, so a lot of talks there were about the technical details, all the different applications and yeah, things that people are building. But just from the general panels with Jack Dorsey and a few other people there, it was really interesting and made me more enthusiastic about it.
Yeah, I need to. I keep saying this. I really do need to get on Noster more frequently. I've got it set up. It's kind of like an afterthought because so much of our brand promotional content is pushed to X because that's where most people are. But I hear like it's high signal on Noster. You just kind of got to make a habit of leveraging it. Unfortunately, I think for a lot of people, it's going to be like Bitcoin where they have to experience some pain before they recognize why it's so important. Inflation, massive inflation, or bread lines, or social unrest to realize why Bitcoin matters. You got to probably have some degree of sense, or the average person probably needs some degree of exposure to what real censorship does for them or their family before they say, okay, I get it. Now Noster or any of these newer protocols coming out make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I fully agree. For most people, the pain is not big enough yet. Obviously, this week with the news of X being banned in Brazil, I think I also saw some posts about people mainly moving to Blue Sky, which is kind of the still more centralized attempt at redoing social media by Jack Dorsey initially, at least as far as I understand. And he's a lot more involved with Noster right now, as I understand. But still, a lot of people just, I don't know, out of convenience or more marketing or whatever the reason is, but I think they had a million new sign-ups for Blue Sky in Brazil. And I saw people posting, like, I don't understand it. Why? Why don't they come to Noster? But that's okay. Kind of like you say with Bitcoin. Bitcoin doesn't have a CEO, doesn't have a marketing department, and there are a lot of enthusiastic people posting about it on Noster itself and even on X. But probably the pain needs to increase. By the time any platform that has a CEO, that has a central office, that has a management team. Can be pressured and will be pressured into censoring any opinions and information that is not along the lines of the central narratives, then people will really find out the true value of decentralization. That's kind of the same thing that I think will happen in that case, the difference between crypto and Bitcoin. Because right now, the main nodes of Ethereum or Solana or Cardano are running in the cloud, and just a few court orders to these cloud operators like AWS and Microsoft Azure will be enough to kill those platforms. So the fact that they've been allowed to operate until now doesn't say anything about the true nature of their decentralization, of the lack or the lack of centralization. That will only become clear under pressure, under duress. So similar to social media platforms, drawing that parallel to Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, when the heat is really brought to them, it will show which ones are really decentralized, open, and censorship resistant, and which ones are centralized and will somehow be choked.
Yeah, I think you hit on the disadvantage, obviously, of these centralized sorts of platforms, and that's primarily censorship in some form or fashion, whether just directed by the board or leadership at the company who operate them, or you know, at the behest of government, which seems to be happening more and more. The advantage, to a point you sort of made, of these centralized is they have efficiency and leverage when it comes to marketing and promoting their products. You know, we just have to spread the word to friends and family. And, you know, like if I go to my, you know, my brother or my best friend, say, hey, you guys should get on Nostr. They're not like Bitcoin fanatics like I am. And so for them to go on Nostr, and 90% of what they're going to see is people talking about libertarianism and Bitcoin and freedom. And it's, no one's talking about the score of, you know, yesterday's football game or, you know, that sort of thing, which is, you know, part of what they're going for. And so I think there's just going to be a lag, and I think it's going to happen the same way Bitcoin has, where you kind of new people trickle in each cycle. And eventually you reach some critical mass where it's like, you know, enough people are here that it gets interesting and people are jumping on board.
Yeah, I fully agree. I mean, network effect is really hard to beat with things like that. But like you said, in the early years of Bitcoin, most probably before you and me were there, the ecosystem consisted of all kinds of hardcore nerds and crypto or cypherpunks. And if you look now, the ecosystem has become a lot more normie, because you also have like the average Joe that just invests a little bit and wants to learn about it, which is a far cry from the way it started. So that kind of same kind of process will probably happen with Nostr and other similar technologies, that in the beginning it's like this hardcore nerdy ecosystem that then over time becomes gets normalized. When I was there in Riga, I mean, I met someone, it was interesting, who basically came to Nostr because of the censorship resistance. And then based on that kind of became a Bitcoiner. So the other way around, she was working on the campaign to free Julian Assange. And because of all the censorship around that, discovered Nostr and became active there. And then kind of with a detour became a Bitcoiner and went to that conference, and we just hung out a bit and were chatting. So and I think what you now see is also there are more content creators starting to use, like photographers, even kind of like OnlyFans type of girls. There are also people starting to use Nostr for that kind of purposes. So it's becoming broader than just the Bitcoiners and libertarians talking about Bitcoin and libertarianism.
That's good to hear.
Yeah, well, fantastic. But that obviously takes time. It's still a fringe thing, of course, but it takes time. I think over time, and the more there will be a need for that, the more rapidly it will grow into something that the internet right now is also covers all bases, all kinds of interests and types of content.
Yeah, slowly then suddenly.
Yeah.
All right, Michael, I got one last question for you. So this is when I ask everyone at the end of the show, what is an unpopular opinion that you hold, and you get bonus points if it offends Bitcoiners as well?
Well, based on what I already told, it might be to be expected. I think it might piss off some Bitcoiners, not all of them, but there is a subset of Bitcoiners that are very religious and devout Christians. No problem with that. Like I said, I'm a libertarian, do whatever you like. But my personal opinion is that religion is a coping mechanism.
Okay. Interesting. All right.
Yeah, like I said, that's obviously shaped by my own experience. I mean, if you look at it from a praxeological standpoint, I already touched upon that humans engage in purposeful activity to reduce uneasiness for themselves. And if you look at it from a perspective of praxeology and Austrian economics, that is mainly working, saving in some kind of sound money to have less uncertainty about the long-term future, so people can start planning for the longer-term future. So they reduce that uncertainty within their lifespan. But there is also what took place before we were born, before our lifespan started, and what happens after it. And I mean, there are human beings have a lot of questions about that. And that also causes, kind of similar to not knowing whether you'll be able to pay the rent or buy food next week, creates uncertainty. the things that people don't know about the what happens after death or how they appeared on this earth also kind of creates a similar kind of uneasiness. And like I said, the way I see religion is a coping mechanism or some kind of mechanism to just give an explanation to it, whether it's possible to prove that or not. To many people, that is just a way to deal with the uncertainties of life, and especially the uncertainty of what happens outside your lifespan. So that's probably a view that might trigger or piss off a few Bitcoiners. Actually, before Prague, I mean, I was too busy. I didn't make it, but I designed a T-shirt and wanted to print it somewhere just as a conversation starter that said, "Democracy is a psyop. Religion is a coping mechanism. Bitcoin is freedom money." And like I said, I think that's a good conversation starter T-shirt, but I will print that one day.
Yeah, you'll sell a few. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll give you a comment that might surprise you then. So I'm a Christian, not Jehovah's Witness. Mm-hmm. And I half agree with you on your sentiment. I think, for me, that's not to say that I believe my faith to be a coping mechanism, but I think for a lot of people, it certainly is. For me, I was raised in a Christian home. And for the longest time, it was, I would say, like, I was a Christian by habit, right? Like, my faith wasn't really mm-hmm. my own. It was more values I was taught, stories I was taught.
Like a cultural thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it wasn't until, honestly, it really wasn't until Bitcoin for me. I would say at some point my faith did become my own. I'd learned enough to understand it. But I think one thing Bitcoin did for me was it made me, I've always been a skeptical guy. It made me extra skeptical of everything, right? Like you start to question when you learn how broken so many things are that you assume to just be right and natural. You start to sort of look within and ask those questions about other things. And so just in the last few years, I've really gone down more a journey of trying to identify like the tangible evidence that might support my faith. And personally, I think I found a great deal of evidence. I don't think anything is perfectly certain, but I found it to be compelling enough that it would take more faith for me to not believe what I have traditionally believed than to abandon it. So all that to say, there are millions, perhaps billions of people around the world who I think probably haven't done a lot of exploring beyond I was raised this way. And it is absolutely a coping mechanism for a lot of people. So I take no personal offense. I understand the position certainly, but you'll piss off some Bitcoiners.
I must admit I'm not 100% atheist because if you look at how our human body functions, how the universe works like clockwork, how nature works, then it's difficult to have the opinion or the view that there is absolutely zero intelligence behind that appearing and running the way it does. Who or what that is, I mean, I spent the first 40 years of my life trying to reach and convince people about a very specific explanation on that, which in the end didn't make me happy. So I'm just taking the liberty for now not to, to involve myself with that and just enjoy my freedom and enjoy my life. So there is some room for some kind of spirituality. There is some kind of force in the universe. What or who it is, I don't know. I said, I'm just taking that liberty based on being overloaded with the other end of the spectrum the first 4 years of my life.
Yeah. Well, no, I appreciate your intellectual honesty on that because I think there are a lot of people who, and this is just my personal opinion, I'm not speaking on behalf of the Bitcoin way or anything. I think there are a lot of people who write off, religion or any form of spirituality as, sort of hocus pocus, silly. And, I've yet to hear kind of the point you're making, like a useful explanation as to why am I here to begin with? Like, why is this physical reality? Why does it exist? And I think until I, not that I have all the answers, but to your point, like the complexity of our biology and I think that's probably been always one of my sticking points with like just pure unbridled atheism. But yeah, I think what's fun about Bitcoin is you can sit around and talk with people who disagree with you and have great conversations and still have a fun common thread for these sorts of discussions.
Yeah. That's, I mean, for me, because like I said, that kind of leaving that religion and building up my life on different foundation kind of coincided with becoming a Bitcoiner. And I must admit, there are a lot of similarities. I mean, that's just human nature with tribalism. There are a lot of similarities between the religion I grew up in and the Bitcoin ecosystem. You have these big events, you have some kind of orthodoxy and the way people react to shitcoinery, or I mean, I could make a long list of aspects that feel and sound very similar to the way I was brought up in that religion. And in the beginning, I must admit that caused some cognitive dissonance for me, like the first one or 2 years. And I thought, okay, haven't I just swapped one utopia for the other, one unrealistic utopia for the other?
Yeah. And Bitcoin became your coping mechanism.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No. So like that was kind of a source for cognitive dissonance until I understood two very important things. Like, first of all, with Bitcoin, it's not so much faith. It's just mathematics that you can check yourself. And okay, I have these discussions with my girlfriend around it sometimes, that the long-term perspective, we were talking about Renaissance 2.0, you could say, okay, you have to believe in that. But still, the basis for that is something that anyone can check and verify based on mathematics, at which I'm terrible, but understand enough of it to understand the basic, the core foundations of Bitcoin. And the other thing is what you just mentioned, is that within that Bitcoin ecosystem, it doesn't matter how you dress, what kind of music you like, what kind of lifestyle you have, whether you're religious or not. I mean, there is a kind of a common thread there with Bitcoiners being libertarians, being carnivores or whatever, but that still doesn't go for all Bitcoiners. There's a variety in there, and the foundation of it is freedom, individual freedom. And that starts with individual freedom to control your own money, your own net worth, and to interact with who you want. But that translates into libertarianism and anyone just deciding what kind of style of life is suitable and agreeable for them. So in that sense, when I understood, okay, those two things, understood that it's based on freedom. And that is very different from what I grew up in, because there, the way you dress, the way you talk, the way you act, what movies you watch, what music you listen to, what people you hang out with, everything is determined and everything is controlled. So that is kind of the exact opposite. Also, although it still had those common aspects of tribalism and some cult-like aspects. But when I understood that big difference, the cognitive dissonance kind of faded away.
Yeah. I love it. Well, Michael, this has been such a pleasure chatting with you. I think we could talk all day. Probably could have talked about that last subject all day.
Yeah.
Why don't you give a handoff? Where can people find you? Learn more about BTC Prague. Talk about the event.
Yeah, BTC Prague is on X, still on X, also on Noster at BTC Prague. My personal account is Michael, and my last name is Roerade, Roerade. And yeah, that's both on X, also on LinkedIn and Noster. So yeah, that's where people can find me.
Fantastic. Michael, thank you so much for your time today. Great chatting. Look forward to hopefully meeting you in Prague next year.
Yeah, likewise. It would be nice to have a nice Czech beer together and continue that conversation.
Yes, sir. Take care. Have a great one.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
And that's a wrap. Again, I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Michael. I know I sure did. Be sure to follow him on X, Noster. I think he said he has his Noster public key on X, and check out BTC Prague. I'm so disappointed I didn't get to make it this past year, but looking forward to trying to get there next year in 2025. Of course, if you need help with Bitcoin self-custody, online privacy, Plan B residency, to citizenship options, check out the bitcoinway.com/podcast to speak with a member of our team and learn more. You can also follow us on X. We're at @thebitcoinway_. Our website's thebitcoinway.com. And if you want to follow me, give me any feedback, comments, suggestions for guests, I'm on X as well, @theothermjordan. And would always love to hear from you. Until next time, this is Michael signing off.